Hello, I'm Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com. This is Floydcast number 50 for January 26, 2015. Well, my inbox is on fire. And no, unfortunately, not my email inbox. I could always use more emails. I get the odd ones. The odd good ones, I mean. The odd ones, the good ones. No, I have a lot of open tabs in my browser. Okay, here's the story. This is more like a confession than anything. Went to the library yesterday. Routine. I go, on average, to a library twice a week. I go to different library systems. I really max out the system. So, typical trip yesterday. Maybe the only atypical thing was I got more than a usual number of books for myself. I think probably my ideal number of books might be two at a time. Two new ones a week, maybe three. And I got four. And one of them is enormous. I don't even know if I'll ever get started. It's so intimidating. Anyway, two are average, good, physics type ones. But one of them is called The Obstacle is the Way. It's by Ryan Holiday. Subtitled, The Timeless Art of Turning Trials into Triumph. Well, the way I looked at it was, I just sort of went, first of all, why did I get this book? You know, there's a lot of this style of book. What made this one stand out? I didn't know. Then I was thinking, you know, I glanced through it and I see those, at the start of every chapter you see a quote. And I'm like, okay, I know the type of book this is. So I figure, okay, the quotes at the start of each chapter are probably the best part of the book. In fact, like I read two or three of the quotes and I'm like, okay, these are good quotes. Might not even have heard of that one. So I'm like, okay, that's going to be the fruit. I'm going to go through, I'm going to type out these quotes and I can send them out to people. I can get this book done and then I only have three books. Only took an hour. Good plan. So the quotes get typed in. And you know, you can't help, even when you're skimming a book and trying to sort of go through it as fast as possible, you can't help reading it. At least I can't. And I don't mean reading it in detail, but you scan read it, and you, when you're looking for certain things, those certain things pop out. So, having typed in all of the main obvious quotes, I had seen some other stories and some other little remarks, and I thought, I gotta go back and read those. I'm gonna actually scan read the entire book, just really fast. Get those one or two stories out. Get the feeling like, okay, I've truly done this book. Then I can truly put it on the done shelf. And then I really have finished this book off. Okay, it's going to take 2 hours instead of one, but that's okay. So I go through and I scan read, and this book is good. Darn you, book. This book is a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call for me personally in the sense that don't judge a book by its cover, by any one parameter. Sometimes a book will surprise you. It's like sometimes a person will surprise you. So, I'm going through this book and I'm desperately trying to go through it now, desperately trying to scan it and not read it, and I'm reading large parts of it. There's good stories in there. This guy's telling you his journey. This guy's telling you what you might be struggling on. This guy's coming at the problem from many angles. This guy has a lot to say in a good way. It's a relatively small book. This book you can read in an afternoon. Although I wouldn't say that's the best way to read it. I would stretch it out over a week or a month. Read it at coffee break. Read it at something really short. If you have a short bus ride, read this book one way. Because it's like my quotations. I send them out every day. And they're meant to be bite-sized. They're meant to be small. They're not meant to be long stories. The most popular thing I send out, the one that goes to the most people, is meant to be very condensed. And it's the regularity of it. It's like a multivitamin. You should take a multivitamin every day. Hang on, Pete. And, you know, some things you can take or leave. You might have eggs at breakfast, but you don't have eggs at lunch. But that multivitamin is a good idea every day. If you eat too much of something, if you have too many multivitamins, that's bad. If you read to the point of the reading becoming the activity, that's bad. It's all about the action. And darn this guy, as I'm going along, you know, you get to the end of the book, I just sort of glance and I see like a lot of references and I'm like, okay, I get it. He's going to tell you the books that he read and, you know, I'm going to definitely avoid that because I feel like I've got everything out of it I want. So I skip through that section and then there's another section. And, oh, I should look up what these things are labeled. All right, so after his selective bibliography is 8 pages, I skipped that, just because I usually do, not for any good reason. Then we get to, this is right near the end, there's only a few pages left in this book, and it says, The Stoic Reading List. And I had seen him mention the word stoic earlier, and, you know, basically everything he was saying was like, it was ringing my bell, but it was like familiar and okay, you know, fine. I guess part of me was saying, I've heard it before. In stoicism, you know, he had like defined it and talked about a big paragraph earlier, and I just went, okay, I'll skip that. So you get to the back here. Stoicism is perhaps the only philosophy, and he uses quote marks, where the original primary texts are actually cleaner and easier to read than anything academics have written afterward. If you think about that, what that's really saying is, we've become soft. Compared to these guys, these Stoics, these guys of a couple thousand years ago, we've become soft. We get all toughened up. And again, that's a wake-up call. I'm part of the mass of people. I'm not as individual as I think I am. All right, continuing that quote, that paragraph, which is awesome because it means you can dive into the subject and go straight to the source. I firmly believe everyone is capable of reading these very accessible writers. Below are my recommendations, both on specific translations and then some additional texts worth looking at. The first guy he recommends is, well, the book is called Meditations, and it's by Marcus Aurelius. I guess he was a Roman ruler. Well, what I remembered from Harry Truman is I think this is the guy he liked, Marcus Aurelius. Harry Truman really liked this guy. Harry Truman had a world-class library. Harry Truman was the opposite of the way he was portrayed in the media. Probably because he was a threat. So it's a good way to control the threat is portray him as the opposite, right? So he says there's one translation of Marcus Aurelius to read. And that is, and he tells you which one. So I'm getting hooked. I'm going online and I'm requesting these from the local library and looking to see, do they have the exact version? Like with Epictetus, he says, and the book is Discourses. He says, personally, I prefer the Penguin translation. And so I'm trying for the Penguin translation. And I actually reached, and this is now like 4 hours in to my 1 hour project. I reached the limit on the holds I can put on one of my library accounts. 60. Now, I normally have it pretty full of holds, but only about half that many. Ah, dear. Boy, my face is red. Other authors. Then he's got Stoic articles and online references. Of course, the online references is like 6 or 7 links there. Then, very last page, reading recommendations. This book and its stories were a result of the books I've been fortunate enough to come across in my life. Each month, I distill what I read into a short email of book recommendations, which I send to my network of friends and connections. The list started at about 40 people, there's a typo there, and is now received and read by 10,000 people from all over the world. All in all, I've recommended, discussed, and chatted more than 1,000 books with these fellow readers in the last 5 years. So this guy is reviewing 200 books a year. He's reading, I think, almost 300, or buying almost 300. And he has his website, how to subscribe, and his email address. And then he says, just put reading list in the subject line. When somebody says that, that means they are reading their email. Even that in itself makes the guy kind of exceptional. This guy's only 26. Check out the first book this guy wrote. This is the title. You don't even need to read the book. Title says, Trust Me, I'm Lying. Confessions of a Media Manipulator. Okay, so this guy's got an honest streak a mile long. He might have gone through a less honest period, but at this moment in his life, he's being very honest. What's his name? Ryan 134. The 1 is the honest number. By the way, the 4 is a hard-working number, and this guy's hard-working. Last name Holiday, 742, for a total of 876. So this guy really just knocked me back a bit. I have still got, and I went through my tabs on my browser, and I tried to reduce them down, and that's, you know, real effort, but I, you know, maybe once a day I have to do that. My browser will start to shake and rattle and roll if I don't keep the tabs under about 40 or 50. And I did that, and then I kept, you know, researching and looking more stuff, looking at his articles. This guy's written a lot. He's getting published online. He lives in L.A., and maybe, you know, it's sort of the L.A. factor. This is sort of the second, actually, significant person I'm thinking of that lives around L.A. Joe Rogan is another one. And these guys are prolific, and they really crank it out. And, yeah, that's sort of why they rise to the top of our attention, is because they're in this high-profile market. They just sort of become famous, partly from being in L.A., right? If you said you were in Hoboken, that's not going to earn you a lot of subscribers. He's even written why LA is good and why it's underappreciated and why you shouldn't go to New York. And, you know, he's doing the kind of things. It's like when you have, you know, football, you have major teams and minor teams. And the major teams, they get the fans. Now, here's a weird phenomenon. I remember people, when I was working for the city and that, and people would talk about going up to Seattle. This is basically a long way from here. To see a baseball game when the Yankees were in town. Now, for me personally, I hate the Yankees. I've never liked any part of them. Oh, I've liked one. No? Okay. I'll be honest. I've liked two parts of them. Williams, first name I forget. I just want to say Jesse. It's probably not right, but it's probably similar. And then, of course, Derek Jeter. And I like those guys because they're just really hardworking. But for the most part, the Yankees, it's just so obvious where the money is coming from with them. The problem with some of these big teams is the money comes from us. The money to build their stadium comes from us. I object to that. Same with the Dallas Cowboys. They have a super expensive, lavish stadium. They get more than their share of time on TV. And who paid for the stadium? You know, it isn't the owner's stadium. It's the people's stadium. I just object to that. I like the small market teams. I like the teams that can try harder. Or like the Paul Allen team, Seahawks, where you know where the money's coming from. It's coming from Paul Allen. He's got enough of it. He can afford it. And there's a better contribution factor from the owner, Steinbrenner. I just never liked the guy. And of course, Hank Steinbrenner and George Steinbrenner. Those first names are horrific. Steinbrenner, I believe from memory, is the same as my name. Same as Floyd. It's very businesslike. But their first names are terrible. Just shockingly bad. And I know I wouldn't want to be around those guys. Where I'd like to be around Paul Allen or Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick. I'm selective in that sense. All right, I've gone off track. I've got to try and remember. Oh yeah, L.A., Joe Rogan, and this guy. So this guy is a go-getter, and he's a wake-up artist. That's what he is. And he's woken me up. I have got a lot of reading to do. You know, part of my cruelty, let's talk about my cruelty. Part of my cruelty is that I look for the weakness. I don't always look for it, I don't look for it right away, but at some point in the cycle, the analysis cycle, that little voice in me starts going, what's the weakness? Why is this guy successful? Because success these days, there's something bad about it. Almost always. To be honest with this guy, you know, I have a few little opinions, a few things, you know, sort of building up what might be the other half of this guy. But he's really working at it. He's really working at himself. I guess one of the big things with this guy, which is good and bad, is he was in marketing. That's why he wrote that first book, Trust Me, I'm Lying. And, you know, he's gone for the brass ring, right? He said, I'm going to rise above marketing. I'm going to be myself. I'm going to be honest. It's interesting, you know, this guy, sort of somewhat of a conflict within his names. And I would say the last name is sort of that more of that pretender name and the name that would be in a big, working for a big company and doing marketing stuff and that. It fits those numbers. His first name is that much more honest and hardworking, like the Stoics. You know, you could argue that the name Ryan is a good name for a Stoic. Stoics are, you know, it's on your own shoulders. Do it yourself. Quit complaining. Work harder. That's this Ryan guy in a nutshell. And it's the 1-3-4 in a nutshell. On its positive side. Right now this guy's bringing out the positive side of his name. That in itself is no small feat. When you're up against an unbalanced name, if you can bring out the positive side of it, that's an amazing accomplishment. It won't last, but it's an amazing accomplishment. Here's an example of somebody where it didn't last. Tiger Woods. As soon as Tiger started getting popular and successful, which was literally immediately, I saw him when he was, I was going to say 2 years old. I forget. When he was super young, he was on like the Merv Griffin show. And that's when we all, some of us anyway, saw Tiger for the first time. And he's gone on to be amazing ever since. Right up until his womanizing period of time. And then, ever since then, he's been nothing. I mean, almost literally nothing. He's had some good years. Let's not take that away from him. But he hasn't won a major tournament. And his star is fading. And the other side of Tiger is much more visible. It's almost night and day what has happened. Well, here's the thing is that Tiger is a terrible name. Tiger 595. How many times have I derided the 595? Which is to say, how many times has it come up where, like Ray Lewis, who got in trouble with the law, the football player, the beleaguered Ravens, Ray Lewis, Ray Rice, and all these guys for the Ravens. You don't want a 595. It'll drive you, but it's not healthy. Of course, he's Eldrick. He was born Eldrick Tiger Woods. And when you work all that out, he has an 8 destiny. And you go, 8 destiny? Okay, that's why he's successful. That makes sense. So I sort of, you know, mollified myself with that. But, you know, he uses Tiger Woods, like, a lot. Maybe not exclusively, but a lot. Well, that's a 9 destiny. And I was like, you know, in the back of my mind, it's like, hey, 9 destiny, you lose. Huck, when is he going to lose? And I wasn't pulling for him to lose. And nobody expected what happened, I don't think. I sure as heck didn't. And I didn't cheer when it happened. And honestly, I was probably one of the first to start giving the minority view, giving Tiger a chance and being understanding. When Tiger's Womanizing came out, it really made me appreciate what these famous people go through. You want another really good guy to study? Mike Tyson. That faux rape, that supposed rape. From the beginning, I've never believed it happened. And they put him in prison for that. You've got to track down the recording of her when she phones into 911. And it starts off sort of like this. Yeah, I think I've been raped. I'm not laughing at anyone who's been raped or anything close to it. I'm laughing at how pathetic this person sounded. You know, when you know the gold-digging numbers, the numbers that are good at sucking money out of other people, it helps. You can really put your finger on somebody pretty fast. And my finger has never left that person who destroyed Mike Tyson's life. But the point is that Mike Tyson, when you read his book, which I've forgotten the title, it was constantly happening to him. Women throw themselves at the feet of rich guys. That's what women do. Not all women, but that's what many women do. Which made me wonder about Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter, you know, this guy has managed to avoid the raindrops. He's been running in the rain for years, and he has avoided the raindrops. He's not even married. I don't know if there's ever been a scandal with this guy. It made me think, and I don't know if this is true. I'd love to hear the real truth, but it made me think that Derek Jeter, if and when he's with a girl, he must tell her, hey, I just want you to know, see that guy over there? That's my security guard. He's filming us the whole time. There will never be a moment when you're not being filmed. That's what you have to do when you're super rich. I mean, Derek Jeter, I'm going to guess he's worth $100 million or more. When you're super rich, they're super after your money. All you need is a lawsuit and the potential bad news. The press loves it and jumps on it. That's all you need, and now you've got yourself a problem. And your net worth starts spinning like, you know, the altimeter when you're in a plane. And I don't know, in the old days, I guess they weren't digital. You'd see that needle spinning around in a circle as you plummet toward the ground. That's your net worth when the media gets involved. So, this Ryan Holiday, thank you for denting my universe yesterday. This being my 50th Floydcast, I wanted to promote myself. Brace yourself for 15 seconds of promotion. Just want to remind everybody, I don't run ads in this Floydcast. I have no intention. I try and cover serious issues. Yeah, there's humor in here, but in my mind, the humor ratio, the amount of humor I put in, is really it's designed to provide some balance. Humor is a part of life, and there's nothing wrong with having some humor. And in fact, sometimes you can take on important issues better when you have some humor, and when you have the ability to see the humor in things. Finally, this Floydcast gets a lot of editing, super detailed editing. And I'll give you an idea. I was watching a documentary, and it was the one about building the wall. And I happened to, like, I wanted the audio in my truck. I wanted to listen to it, like, a number of times because it was that good. It was just interesting because it was a guy trying to make a documentary, and then things didn't go the way he expected. And he was just very revealing and honest about his process. And I wanted to study and think about that. So I got the audio, and there were large periods of time in this audio, in this documentary, where nothing's happening. That's sort of the beauty of it, right? There's this big, fat, imposing wall, and especially when the guy's not working on it, it's like time goes by. You hear a bird chirp. A car drives by. And then he says something insightful. So I wanted to go through it and get rid of all the bird chirping and just get the insight. And then I can listen to that more often and quicker and just compress this documentary into my head sort of thing. So I ended up going through the audio file. And one of the things I observed was he must have used some digital technology to automatically flatten the points where he goes, where he breathes. The flattened audio portions now rose to a very precise height, and they stood out like even more. Anyway, this is all technical, but basically, bottom line, it made me think about the editing of the audio that he did. I do a better level of editing than his audio. It doesn't make it perfect. You can't make it perfect. Audio and video, you cannot make perfect. But the goal is to get rid of things that would be a petty counter-argument. That would be a petty distraction, a minor, no-value distraction. There's nothing wrong with having a good distraction, but if it's a no-value distraction, I try and get that out of there. There's an attempt at purity, an attempt at ringing the bell. Thinking of Philip Morris and the Ring of Truth. This guy, Philip Morris, and can you believe it, the Ring of Truth, you cannot get that in any library system near me. That's three major library systems that have 100 million books, and none of them have that book. This Philip Morrison is a very interesting guy. I think I already ordered it used from Amazon. And the other one, it was too expensive. Plus, I had owned it 20 years ago or 30 years ago, and I did read it, and I did like it at the time, so I feel like, okay, I've half incorporated that one. But, you know, it's sort of a ripoff. You have all kinds of trash that's available, and something really good, you got to go and buy it. And the one I'm thinking of, The Ring of Truth, by the way, this guy, Philip Morrison, is a physicist. And the Ring of Truth is very important in physics, particularly important. But anyway, but this is like a color book. You know, it's like a coffee table book. It's probably like $50, $60. And it all went out in the trash when I was forced, evicted, basically, thanks to my ex. That's the downside of owning a lot of books. At some point, you will be giving them away. I had thousands, probably 1,000 books, and I had literally 1,000 pounds of books now that I think about it, so I probably had 500 books. I might have talked about my friend who was very one-ish and very powerful and strong, and he didn't mind being ordered around. Like, he sort of liked that, because that's sort of the way the one quality is. They want to do the right thing. They're uninterested in sugarcoating it. And so I got him to help me move one time, and it was just a self-move in the car, and the biggest part of my move was my books. I had 12 boxes, 70 pounds per box. That's, you know, when you're young, when you're in your 20s, 70 pounds, you're like, okay, I'm working. When you get in your, you know, 40s, you're like, I don't know if I can lift it. And when you're in your 50s, you're like, okay, take the other end. I just wouldn't even pack it that heavy these days. It's sort of embarrassing as you get older. Like, I have metrics for things. I'm aware of what 10 pounds weighs. But as you get older, you start losing that metric because 5 pounds feels like 10 pounds. So books. I've gone through the having a lot of books phase. And this Ryan, he's going to at some point, he moved recently. And oh man, he did a whole article on his books and pictures of his books. He got a pod, you know, one of these containers that you put out in your front. And he filled that with books. And it was 8 by 8 by 8 feet. And he said there was room for more books if I'd needed them. Anyway, he's found a way to make his system work, and more power to him. But for most of us, I don't know if we can quite afford the book diet this guy goes on. I do like a lot of what he says. You name the subject. There's very few of his pieces that I've rapidly tried to read through that I've completely disagreed with. There's been a couple, but mostly really good stuff. I think it's ryanholiday.net. Part of the thing of the good people is they make their stuff available for free as well. They know that success doesn't come from one thing. You know, there's a time when it came from one thing. You wrote one book and you became a millionaire type thing. Those days are far gone. There might be that odd book. Speaking of odd movies, I don't even remember the name of it. Called Childhood or Youth or... It's something like that. There's some movie that's sweeping the Oscars. It's supposedly like they filmed this person throughout their life. Sort of an anthology of their life or snapshots of their life. I don't know. Apparently it's not even a movie. Like, it doesn't watch. But it's become fanatically praised. I don't know why. I don't even know why I got distracted by that. That's my problem, not his. All right, let's move on. Thanks, Ryan, for setting me back 12 hours. Jerk. Update on Robert Allenby, the golfer. Successful, high-profile golfer. Gets kidnapped, dumped in a ditch, beat up, and left for dead. Well, the headline, which is a bit misleading, says his kidnapping story just keeps getting weirder. And the bottom line of this page is that they're saying that, you know, the homeless person that rescued him has a different take on events than what he says. When you read it, it's not hard to imagine that the homeless person is embellishing, taking advantage of it. It's not hard to imagine that if the homeless person knew the other homeless people that robbed him, they would have an incentive to change the story. He gave the homeless person $1,000. The homeless person might have smelled money. There's a credibility gap. Also, this Robert Allenby, as I was talking about last week, he's Australian, which is like British. You know, this is, you know, in relative terms, a very honest society, an honest group of people. And my money is entirely on Allenby's version of events. But they showed pictures of Allenby. Seriously beat up guy. He made a little comment saying that, sort of to add insult to injury, he has to deal with this homeless person making up events. And he has to talk about that on, you know, social media to try and quell those rumors. Again, when you know the numbers, I'm just looking squarely at Robert Allenby's name and all those six qualities, that five destiny. You just know this guy got five-ished. He got fived. You don't want to get fived. It's like when LeBron James went to Miami. LeBron James had 23 or 32, I forget which it is, but, you know, reduces to 5, and it's sort of in honor of Michael Jordan. A number of people have done that, taken uniform 23. Anyway, 2 and 3, 5. LeBron got 5-ished when he went to Miami. The press jumped on him with both feet and never stopped jumping on him to this day. That became a story for the ages for the press. Someone must have pulled out the calculator and went, I think we can make $100 million on this story. I mean, they've literally made tens, if not hundreds of millions on that story. And what did LeBron do? LeBron did what LeBron wanted to do. LeBron did what was best for LeBron. He did nothing wrong. In fact, he did everything right. But he took back the power, and they don't like that. And they sure as heck don't want other people doing it. So he became an abject lesson. It's like Edsel Ford. You know, maybe Edsel Ford wasn't a great guy, but they had it in for Ford. And they couldn't take on the old man, but they sure got the son. And so when the Edsel car came out, they sure sunk that car. It's like Waterworld. Costner was getting too powerful, too big. And they took Waterworld, and Costner put a lot of his own money into Waterworld. So they're like, okay. Rub your hands, we're going to nuke him with Waterworld. He's all in, he's all invested. We're going to destroy Waterworld in the press. And you know what? There's no reason to. Waterworld is as good as, or better than, 90% of the movies out there. It may not be a 4-star movie. For me personally, it's at least a 3-star, 3.5-star. I watched it more than once. That's my criteria for a better than average movie, a movie worth watching. If you only watch it once, it's almost not worth watching. If you watch it more than once, you know, twice, three times, that's a good movie. And if you watch it often and get something out of it and get different things out of it each time, to me that's a top movie. That's my top category. So poor Mr. Allenby is still in the news for the wrong reasons. What did he do? He's going to be staring in that mirror asking himself, what did I do? That question is going to come up. And he doesn't have the answers because life doesn't have the answers. Almost no one knows about the value of a name. I got feedback this last week where someone made the point that if I'm a care provider, don't I have to be careful about what I say about doctors? As much as I don't want to sort of admit it, it is a good point. Or, you know, you have to be careful, you have to be genuine, you have to not get into the thrill of being critical. And that's a fair comment. I don't think I can stop being honest, and I don't think stopping honesty is the right approach. But it is possible that one or more of my clients might at some point listen to, you know, some of my opinions and about doctors or whatnot and be upset by that. And, you know, that's part of the risk of living a good life. It is impossible to avoid controversy. Controversy comes to those who start to become better than the average, start to become more read than the average, more listened to, more respected than the average. That's when the controversy comes. It doesn't come when if you're a homeless guy in the street and you piss on a doorway. There's no controversy. No one is surprised. All right, move along. It's understood, it's accepted. Poor guy. You get sympathy for it. If you start to become successful and you piss on a doorway, you don't get the same treatment. Many years ago, I made the decision to do what is important to life, not what is designed to win friends and influence people. Well, you could say what I'm doing is designed to influence people, but I've thought about that. In a way, what I do is designed to drive away people. Now, that's counterintuitive at best. What I mean is, when you talk about things that don't matter, and by the way, Ryan Holiday deals with this quite well. He talks about what gets the clicks. And what gets the clicks these days is no different than any other day. It's garbage. It's like the people slowing down for the accident on the side of the road. That car that's all smashed up, that's literally garbage. And people are staring at it like it was gold. And that's what people do. So you have a choice when you want, if you want clicks. You can promote garbage, or you can promote what is valuable and get 1,000 times less following, especially these days. I think what was the turning point for me in my life and in terms of, you know, the whole promotion notion was finding the philosophy, because the philosophy laid it all out. The philosophy is the answer. It's like you turn to the back of the book, and there's the answer to all the questions. And when I say all, I mean all the questions in that book. You know, in other words, there's still creativity and free will in the philosophy. In fact, it's there more so. Once you get past the initial skepticism, you realize the philosophy is truly empowering. Having a balanced name is truly empowering. It doesn't make you like everybody else. It means the name is no longer this gross distortion of your life. Now, see, when I say that, you could argue that I'm turning off everybody that's listening to this, because almost everybody has an unbalanced name somewhere. So I've just turned you off, right? Your name is grossly distorting your life. What a jerk, right? Or you can go, okay, maybe that's true. Do I want that? What are you prepared to bet on your approach? I'm prepared to bet everything on my approach. I am betting everything on it. I live by it. I've lived by it. I've seen the name, the effect of the name, the cycles, everything. I have probably seen 100,000 times proof. That's a lot of proof. Some people will do something amazing and crazy and spontaneous and reckless based on seeing a pattern of 3 things or 4 things or 5 things. So on my side is that when you hit truth, when you hit the mother load of truth, it changes you. And that's when I really embraced the notion of, I'm not going to go for the majority successful by the popular measure of that, of success. I'm not going to go for that. I still fooled myself to some extent. I thought I can be successful within the exact route I've chosen. But I realized more as time goes by that when you really truly are at the leading edge of the wedge, when you really truly are there, you will not be financially successful. You are not meant to be financially successful. You are the leading edge of the wedge. You're taking the heat. You know, that lead goose, Canada geese, when they're migrating, that lead goose is putting out a third more energy than everybody else. That's not profitable. The profitable bird, with the geese, you'll see them coasting a little bit, but if you want to see it, there's another species where there's coasting, where the birds fly in a bit of a group and there's coasting. Here's where you'll see it. Twilight, end of the day, going back to their roost, you'll see crows sometimes. You have to get the right circumstances. Like, I've seen it on the coast. I think the coast supports a little bit more life, so the crows are a little bit more dense. In the suburbs, in the city, crows are like, they're like policemen. They're evenly distributed throughout the city, so you won't see them flying together as often. But you get to the ocean and, you know, you'll see them in groups. And they'll be flying along, 6 or 8 of them, in a straight line, not in a V, and you'll see that last crow coasting. It's like a mini version of the geese, but a whole lot less communication needed. I mean, you watch geese and they fly in circles and the V breaks up, and it's just like the geese themselves. The personality of Canada geese, it's just like Canadians. Canadians can be a little bit lazy. A little bit enjoying talking versus doing. And that's the geese. Where the crows are like, hey, we're not stupid. We know this thing works. But we still want to get from A to B in a straight line. And we don't circle around and flap and get confused. We're just going in a straight line. And by the way, the last guy's saving a bit of energy. And knowing crows, The last guy's saving energy so that if they see an eagle, he can go off and attack the eagle. If you ever want to see an amazing sight, you watch crows harassing an eagle or a hawk. They will do it as long as you watch. It will keep going and going and going and going. You don't want to be in a crow's bad book, believe me. You want to talk about a species that comes close to human qualities. To me, it is the crow. And I know you could say the raven and the raven smarter. I don't know the difference. So substitute raven for crow or crow for raven and give yourself 5 brownie points. So the essence of truth is dividing. When you say something truthful, some people resonate with it. And they go, hey, you know, that makes sense. There's a whole mass of people that are like munching on a pretzel when you say truth. And they're like, this pretzel's good. They didn't really hear it. And then there's some people when you say truth, they're like, you know, I really don't like this guy. They don't know why they're saying that. And in truth, they are not saying that. They are being influenced by something. There are forces of anti-truth, or there are anti-truth forces. When you are controlled by an addiction, and someone starts talking about your addiction, saying it's bad and you should stop doing it and now's the time, you're like, you know, I've heard that before. I've heard people complain about video games and they're violent, and they've done studies, and the violence in video games doesn't lead to violence in real life. There's correlation but no causation. Well, all of that, you just spoke someone else's opinion, not the truth. There's of course a causation. There's of course a relation. But you don't want to hear it. And so to make money, you have to say stuff that people want to hear. You have to do that. Like one of the things I disagree with Ryan about was, he's talking about get a book agent. If you want to publish books, get a book agent. To my dying days, I will never get a book agent. I don't care. I would rather print the books myself and stick a pile on the corner and let people take them and use them for fire starter in their backyard fire pits than to have a book agent. Among other things he said in that same article, these guys went over his book with a fine-tooth comb and they tweaked it, right? That's what an agent is. Somebody who changes you to the form that they can live with, that isn't a threat to them. It is so easy to do. You need to change but a small part of a book, but a small part of a person, and they are no longer a threat. It's kind of like the difference between Starbucks and Pete's. Pete's is happy where it is. There's no angst with Pete's. There's no pretense there. It's just quality, period. You go into the shops, it smells good, people are relaxed, they're reading, they're enjoying. The people are super nice behind the counter. Totally professional quality product, they'll talk with you as long as you want to talk. Or you can leave. It's a perfect, clean transaction. You go to Starbucks, and I walk in. First of all, I mean, I've read the book about Starbucks. And they designed their stores to a pattern. They realized that the profit was in coming up with styles of stores. They had designers do it. And then when you wanted a Starbucks store, you chose one of the patterns that they had designed. And their little team came in and made your store that pattern. You got a cookie cutout. So the Starbucks image is preserved. Your store is exactly like literally 1,000 others. Would you want a store that was exactly like 1,000 others? Do you think from that store you could come up with truly innovative, original things? I guaranteed not. You know what you'll come out of with a store like that? You'll come out of it with a crappy cup of coffee. An absolutely horrendous cup of coffee. And someone will smile all the way to the bank, depositing your $5 for that small coffee. I've tapped into a pet subject of mine that I've been meaning to talk about. There's something about the way I live that is designed to drive people away. It's part of my design of how I live. It's part of my choice. There are different choices, and good people can make different good choices, and then they live by their choice. But truth drives people away. It drives the majority of people away. For the guy eating the pretzel, and you say something truthful, he didn't get it. And you might be pausing, going, I'm letting that truth sink in. And the guy at the pretzel is like, I wonder what else is on. He's already lost. The attention span is gone. He's moved on. Your moments to grasp truth are fleeting. Say it's fluoride. How many times does fluoride come up? Not counting me. How many times does fluoride come up in your life? Let's say it's twice a year. You go to the dentist, they do not bring it up. They don't even know themselves. They don't even know which of their products have fluoride in them. But when pressed, they will tend to admit, oh yeah, that's probably got fluoride. Oh yeah, that's probably got fluoride. Oh yeah. Like the paste that they grind your teeth with, it's got fluoride. Everything has got fluoride there. It's a wonder the tap water, well, of course the tap water in a fluoridated area does have. Yeah, it's just, they're surrounded by poison. It's kind of an amazing job. Would you want that job? Well, here's the thing. How many times do you run across someone that is anti-fluoride? It won't be a lot. Each of those times is a chance for you to finally get to figure out that subject. And if you don't, someone like me, like a distance will develop between us. Hang on. I got so much stuff on my desk, so much stuff to read and to do and everything else, I just tipped something over. What do we do when we hear truth? The thing is this, is that we don't know. They control the media. They control most of what we hear and see. Most of it is false in some way or another. So we're normally not hearing truth. So we don't know those few moments when we hear truth. We simply don't know. When I heard about microwave radiation, I had probably had this subject come up to me before. But that one time on Slashdot, 14 months ago, when the guy said, you know, you should check out the documentary Resonance, I think that's all the guy said. And it might have been some anonymous guy. You know, there wasn't a lot behind it. It would be easy to ignore it. Most people did. I chose to look for the documentary. I think they said it was on Vimeo. Vimeo is can host quality videos, and sometimes you can download them. I go to Vimeo. There it is. It's free, and you can download it. I do all that. My life gets changed. It was by a fluke. My life got completely changed, like the rest of my life, like my life starting 14 months ago. The life of my family, my pets, wife, kids. It all got changed completely by 5 words in a Slashdot post. I could have gone the other way. I could have missed it. I could have been skeptical. People are skeptical about wireless because, believe me, the forces are out. And they, you know, the funny thing is about trolls, the funny thing about the people who lie to us, they only need a few lies. They really don't need very many. But what they need is a bunch of different people saying the same thing all at once, and they just shout you down. They scorn you down. Oh, look at this guy. Some people, they just are afraid of science. These kind of implied thoughts, like going against microwave radiation is going against science. I've had people say to me, why don't you leave the science to the science guys? I can safely say, in analyzing my life and how much time I've spent thinking scientifically, that I think as scientifically as anybody. Doesn't mean I'm always right. Doesn't mean I'm always productive. But I have an analytical, scientific side, without a doubt. You can't take me on from the science angle. Sorry, Mr. Troll. That won't work. That supports my case. That supports the case against fluoridation, against microwave radiation, against vaccines. Oh, vaccines. How many times do you hear an anti-vaccine person without trolls swarming around making the person look stupid? How many times? How many moments do you get to grasp the truth? This is a really serious question. It's the kind of question that drives you away, makes you a little uncomfortable. That's behind Floyd Maxwell. You might as well know how many people are totally honest, that can tell you their intent, not just lecture at you, not just come up with a gimmicky 21 ways to. That's one thing that Ryan Holiday uses a lot. 14 things you didn't know about, 5 reasons why you can be this kind of headline stuff. I think I did that once with my top 10 tips for a healthy life or whatever I called it, I don't even remember. You know, there are people that don't like that. It's fascinating, I always sort of try and understand the other person's point of view. There was someone when I was working at one job, and this person didn't like shows that had like a top 10 list. I can honestly say I don't fully understand it. I think the reason is that I automatically go through that top 10 list. I go through with a pair of scissors and a garbage can right next to me, and I'm going to cut out all the garbage and throw it away right away. And I'm going to be left with 3 points. I know that. And then out of those 3 points, there's going to be one worth thinking about. And I'm going to think about that one. But I think most people don't do that. And this person probably sensed something about most people, that the top 10 list, you know, sort of anti, let's say anti the spirit of the thing. The problem is it generalizes it so much. How many top 10 lists can you look at in your life? If everything becomes a top 10 list, you stop processing, you stop receiving. The truth becomes harder to find. And so I accept that person where they're coming from, their point of view on top 10 lists, even though that doesn't deter me at all. It doesn't necessarily attract me at all, but it doesn't deter me. So the creepy people are the ones that are good at attracting us. They're good at saying something that everyone will nod their head to. Some qualities are good at that. This guy Ryan writes about, don't be nice, be honest. It might have been a different article I saw yesterday, but he's also covered it as well. This Ryan talks about working, and he lists a bunch of activities. He's like, no, thank you, I don't want to do any of those, and, you know, including, hey, let's go out and do lunch and all this. This guy works, and there's a lot to be said for that. Hanging out and doing lunch, there's a time-wasted side to that. And it doesn't take much to turn that into working. For example, say you have a project. Not everyone has a project, but let's say you have a project and now you do lunch, but you're going to talk the project. And of course, this Ryan does exactly this. So he does do lunch, but he does lunch with a project. So it doesn't take much to turn something that's a time trap and a waste into something productive. In my life, I've taken the head-on approach to truth. I don't think too many do that. It's funny, when I say that, there's an absence of thought in my head. I don't know why. I guess it's me. Truly. The pursuit of truth, regardless. The expression of truth, whether you, the reader, the listener, care or not. And it is divisive. There is a way to talk that everyone will buy in. Everyone will nod their heads. They'll feel great. They'll leave it and they'll be like, wasn't that the greatest talk? That was the best talk I've heard today. But there's something in that which says it will get lumped in with all the rest in some way. You need to work at it. Something needs to bother you for you to get something out of it. Like this guy Ryan was bothering me constantly yesterday. I was trying to get through him. I was trying to, like, okay, thanks for the quotes, goodbye. He wouldn't let the door close. He had his foot in the door. He was really pissing me off. And I go through again and it's like, look at this guy, he's added more good stuff in here. He wrote it like at a second level of good stuff. And it was like, I ripped that level off in annoyance. And there was other good stuff underneath. And then at the end, he was almost like he was wagging his finger like, you thought you were done, dreamer. There's more here. And try and rip this part of the book out. And in the back of the book, those little sections, he had laminated those in so you couldn't rip those out of the book. Those ones are keepers. Talks about when he buys books and he folds over the pages and he writes in the margins. He says, even if the author has signed the book, so what? It's meant to be read. Speaking of that, Ernie Banks, baseball player, passed away this last week. I didn't know too much about the guy, but of course, interesting numbers, you know, so start thinking about him and looking up quotes from the guy and whatnot. He wasn't a deep guy. He was just a well-liked, good, honest guy, hardworking. Mike Wilbon is an ESPN guy. He's on TV, he's part of a show. He appears in basketball games. He's a Chicago born and raised type guy, and he's very much a Chicago fan, which is rare these days. It's usually all New York. Anyway, Mike Wilbon is a guy worth listening to. Really honest, smart. And he got an Ernie Banks shirt, and he went and got, like, the way they used to make shirts, like some retro shirt, some shirt. They either reissued it or he got it on eBay or whatever, some very expensive baseball shirt that was like an Ernie Banks number or shirt, whatever. And then he ran into Ernie Banks, and he was like, hey, I want you to sign these two shirts for me, and I'm going to frame them, and I'm going to put them up on the wall. And Ernie Banks said, don't do that. Wear them out to the baseball game. They're meant to be worn. How many guys would tell you that? There's something in that that drives some people away. In the case of Ernie Banks, you know, it's like literally some types of people would not attract him because he's so different than them. Mike is not a good name, but he goes by Mike Wilbon. He was open to what this guy was saying, and then when the guy passed away, Mike Wilbon writes an article and mentions that little story, that little vignette. It's true, right? wear this wisdom, my quotes, thoughts, and inspiration, wear it. This guy Ryan was saying, you know, write it down. Write down the important things and stick them up around you. Then it'll be hard to ignore them. He's absolutely right. I went through a phase where I did that. I was going to say prolifically, then I was going to say horrifically. I did it a lot. Write down important stuff and stick it up on the wall. Do it. Do it now. Make the first one, I need to write down more stuff and stick more stuff up on my wall. Make that the first thing you put up on your wall. And leave that one there. Make all the other ones sort of gradually emanate out from that one. Write down more stuff and stick it up on your wall. Have it be short. Have it be something that you've heard the ring of truth of. Something that has resonated with you. Not something that, oh yeah, in theory this is a good line because I've heard it 1,000 times. No, don't write that one on, put it on your wall. Write down the one that really gets to you. You know what you've done by doing that? Now you have a little picture of yourself on the wall. And that little picture of yourself is staring back at you and it's tapping its finger in your shoulder and saying, why aren't you getting busy? Go do something. Speaking of doing something, I've got to let the cat out. All right. So what triggered this person's comment last week was about doctors, and they felt I was sort of picking on doctors. And maybe, I don't remember, but maybe something of what I said was overly general. And yeah, that's problematic, right? If you're overly general. But doctors have gone through the system. The system is hell. The system is torture. The system is long. The system is expensive. The system is full of brainwashing. And doctors go through that. And when they come out, most of them are now part of the system. And that system says, lord it over your patients. You are God. They are nothing. And you know what you're doing. They don't. Poisoning them and cutting them open is good for them. And if you do all this for at most 20 years, you will be a millionaire. That's the system. If you want to be different than that, you have to work at it. There's no gimme. When you go against the system, you have to work every bit of the way. It will never be easy. It's not supposed to be. If it was easy, everyone would do it. Starbucks is easy. Everyone does it. Go against the system. So here's the 1 minute version of all that. Dr. Arden Zimmerman is the guy who invented the specific adjustment machine. I've written about it on my website. I've done a short video about it. This guy was an engineer by his training. He was bedridden. He was dying. 30 years bedridden, 30 years very bad health. He created the machine to treat himself and completely cure himself in literally a fraction of a second. But he had to become a doctor to legally be able to use the machine, so he became a chiropractor. Okay, that's a doctor I can respect, who's really an engineer. Another doctor who's really a humanitarian that I respect, or I think I do. Maybe if I studied their life, maybe I wouldn't. Albert Schweitzer. Schweitzer, there's a lot of good quotes, there's a lot of good humanitarian quotes, and you know, there's not enough humanitarian quotes in life. Move on to the next story here. Whole Foods staff appear to be giving a man a beatdown at the entrance to their Union Square store in New York City. Well, first of all, I've seen the videos. I've seen a number of them. I've seen the photos, still photos. They were beating a man. There's no need to say they were appearing to do it. There was a huge crowd of witnesses. It was filmed. There were still photos taken. And it's one of the ugliest things I've seen in a while. Now, the individual is drunk. They didn't want him in the store. Okay. But you know, what do you need to do to stop someone from going in the store? There was a number of them. There was more than one of them. They were bigger than the drunk. They weren't drunk. So they had 3 factors in their favor. Did they need to be swearing at the guy? Did they need to be shouting at the guy? And did they need to be kicking the guy and beating up on the guy until he was unconscious? All right, let's just get to the chase here. Whole Foods. Everyone loves Whole Foods, right? One of these healthy food things, right? Well, of course, it's a massive chain. Whole Foods, Whole 279. Foods, 325. 595 total. We started talking about 595 earlier. What about Whole Foods Market? Well, you mark it as 685. When you add a 685 to a 595, you get a 281 total, one destiny. Well, we've talked many times about both the 281 and the 595 and how violent they are. I should go back through my notes and count up all the times that both of those combinations have come up. It's probably a half a dozen of each. And some of these were real killers. So look at that. The store has a horrible name combination. Violent name combination. And we're absolutely dishing out violence like you would not believe. I'll have the video. Oh yeah, in my notes I say, by the way, I'm pretty sure, I'm willing to bet that Whole Foods Market sells booze. So we'll sell you the booze that kills you, that makes you a drunk, that people will kick. Oh, and by the way, we'll then kick you. You know, it's quite possible that guy actually bought booze at Whole Foods Market, drank it, got drunk, and came back to the same market, and then got the crap kicked out of him by that market. Does that seem holistic to you? This thing was so bad, and the people watching it were doing nothing. They would make, whoa, when he was like particularly kicked or when he was knocked out and various things. They were doing sound effects. Not scorning sound effects, but just honest reaction sound effects, but doing nothing. At one point they're laughing. Yeah, it could be that nervous laughter where you're like, you don't know what else to do. I'll have two different links. There was originally this thing appeared on liveleak.com. Some of the worst filming I've ever seen in my life. But the second one, which is on YouTube, someone image stabilized it. They probably used some software that frame by frame goes through it. It's like what they did with the Zapruder film. The guy wasn't a good photographer and it wasn't a good piece of equipment and, you know, very jerky filming mechanism. And they've taken those frames and they've aligned all the frames so it all flows smoothly. Anyway, the YouTube one, they did that so you can actually watch the thing. But this is the dark side of human nature. This is the dark side of big corporations pretending they care about you and pretending they care about Whole Foods. Sorry, I'm not buying any of it. There's been a thing this last week with Tom Brady, Deflategate. The idea that football's got deflated for this football game, and the New England Patriots are this big high-profile football team, and now they're scrambling to defend themselves. So far, it seems like the coach didn't know about it. The quarterback, who's sort of the next most likely person to be behind this, he gave a big press conference and honestly didn't come across perfectly. Came across at least a little bit suspect. A lot of analysts for ESPN were flat out staring at the camera disappointed in this guy, Tom Brady. Tom Brady has lived a charmed life. He literally married a supermodel. He's worth tens of millions, Hall of Famer, considered the best quarterback ever, at least in the running. So, Wikipedia says Thomas Edward Patrick, or Tom Brady Jr. I'm not going to get too much into his names. I will say this, as Tom Brady, it's a successful name. No shocker there. What about the birthday? August 3rd, 1977. 836 for an 8. Well, the 8 is the success number. So he was an 8 under an 8, just like myself. And now he's an 8 under a 3. And the 3 is successful just because they love life and people like them and they have enthusiasm and it can be a success number, definitely. But what cycle is he in? Right now, this month, when all this hit, Tom Brady is in a 2-year, 5-7 month, and yeah, that's the accident looking for a place to happen, cycle month. You only get that cycle month twice every 9 years. In 108 months, only two of them have that combination. Isn't that interesting? You know, what's also interesting is there's clearly no advantage to having the balls slightly deflated. Physicists are writing in, literally, you know, and science types and saying, well, if you had it in the fridge when you did this, and then if you take it out, then it'll do that. And it's not too hard to come up with at least half of the difference just by the way it was all handled. But I have 2 points about that subject. Number one, the NFL is highly regulated. The rule book for football is bigger than any other sport. This is the way they manage their footballs. They have 3 sets of footballs. Each team has 1 set of footballs. And that set is for them to use when they are in possession of the ball, when they are on offense. When the other team is on offense, you use the other team's footballs. I don't know why. Why do they have this? I don't know. They do measure the pressure of the ball a certain amount of time before game time. They make sure the balls are within the spec, and then you're not supposed to touch them, but they give them back to the team. Now they have a third set of balls that are only for kicking. Kicking is something where they want it to be a level playing field. If you take a ball that's been kicked a few times, it's a little softer, a little springier, and it'll go farther. They know this, and so they don't allow anyone to kick those balls till the actual game. So that there's no advantage, and so that, you know, you might say the first 5 or 10 kicks, because I think they only have 10 balls in each set. So for the first 10 kicks, the kicking will be as fair as possible. Well, here's the thing. So the kicker balls are managed entirely by the NFL. The team balls, we'll call them, are inspected by the league, and they're up to snuff, and they've got the pressure adjusted, and then they're given back to the teams. So the balls are kept in three different places. Why do they do all that? There's simply no way you can justify doing that. If you already have guys looking after the kicking set of balls, they could look after all the balls. It would be a microscopic amount of additional work. It would be a completely fair third party. Instead of having a case that's this big that holds 10 balls, you have a case that's this big and it holds 30. You have little slots, little compartments. You could probably buy the slots, piece of plywood, and cut it and probably make it for like $5. So a couple of $5 dividers, football problem solved. You know, one of the things is that they're fine with not solving problems, because when you don't solve problems, they'll lead to future media coverage. And media coverage equals big money, and it equals large numbers of people wasting their time. They like that a lot. My other point about this football thing, they always do this. There's 2 weeks before the Super Bowl every year. 2 weeks is a long time. This is the football hangover weekend right now. We're in the football hangover weekend. There's no football. They're trying. There's no college football. There's a Pro Bowl on later today. It's embarrassing. Who cares? They will be showing videotape and talking Seahawks and talking and talking and talking football. There'll be a Sunday NFL countdown today, even though there's no football game. So they need something to carry through 2 weeks. Football is such a big thing that if you can create a football story, it will carry for 2 weeks before the Super Bowl. To have a story be in the mainstream and to carry things for 2 weeks, that's worth a lot of money. So they always do this. There's always some story that they build out of all proportion. You know, they're not above faking some or all of this, right? Or exaggerating it. One of the things they did with New England Patriots some years back, 5 or 6 years back, whatever it was, the Patriots were caught and punished by the league for filming another team while the other team was playing, for filming them doing their call signs. Bill Belichick said, you know, there's 80,000 fans watching this team from the sidelines, watching them do their call signs. We chose to videotape it. Everyone else, to this day, think that Patriots are cheaters. They've made a huge thing about it. Everyone in the media does this, 100%. No one cuts them any slack. In my opinion, what they did was nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's semantics. The Patriots could have literally hired 20 people to study this other team and to study their signals. And those 20 people could have reported back to the Patriots and to the rest of the guys. They could have then filmed those 20 guys doing a little in-house press conference. They could have filmed them and made a video of it. They could have put it on every player's MP3 player. They could have had billboards and plaques made up with their call signs. And all of that would have been completely legal. But because they videotaped it, oh, we're going to vilify them forever. I get it. No, actually, I don't get it. This is how the media works. The media is not fair at all, by definition, ever. They are never fair. They can't afford to be fair. They just pretend to be fair. And they control all the marbles, so it's their game of marbles if you want to play. I had a bit of analysis about players and cycles and whatnot. In the game that Seattle almost lost last week, Richard Sherman and Pete Carroll, they're both in the same cycle. They had been in a super good football day 2 weeks ago. They were in a 1 day. Last Sunday, on the 18th of January, they were in a 9 day. both of them. So these are arguably the two most important people on the team were in a 9-day. Well, what happens in a 9 days? You can lose. I think it's a 9-month, 9-day, 9-month, or a 9-6 month. Well, they almost lost. It came down to the last 5 minutes. Seattle came from 2 touchdowns behind, tied it up, got a 2-point conversion, so they had a 3-point lead. The other team then marched down the field, got a field goal. Now it's all totally tied up. Goes into overtime. And in overtime, Seattle, by the luck of the draw, gets the ball first. They march down the field and score a touchdown. Or, no, the other team got it. They stopped them. Then they got the ball. Then they marched down and got a touchdown. Anyway, the point is that everything went wrong for Seattle, and then everything went right. Interesting. I didn't even work out Wilson, the quarterback. He must have been in a bad cycle because he had maybe his worst game ever. He had 4 interceptions. It's only the second time in the history of the NFL playoffs that a team had 4 interceptions and then won the game later on. There was a little random story of this person, Mary Ellen Brooks. She was driving along and she did something and her car overturned. And she was trapped in her car. It overturned onto the driver's side so that you can't get out the driver's side. Now you have to somehow try and climb out of some other part of the vehicle. Not easy. This football player, Vince Wilfork, for the New England Patriots, happened to be driving along. He saw the problem, and he decided to help. He helped her out of the car. And, of course, the press picks up on this, and then it's another one of these, you know, Super Bowl week, hangover week stories, right? Something to talk about. But let's look at the numbers. So the guy who helped her, Vince Wilfork. Vince, 5'3", 8". The 5 helps the underdog. 5'3", 8", super confident, and very much justice-oriented. When you see a car tipped over, you know, you want to help, if you have those qualities. Wilfork, 6'7", 4", 3 Destiny, 2-1-3 total. 2-1-3, very likable, very people-oriented. They just, 3 loves people, they want to help, they give the shirt off their back kind of thing. So everything he did made sense, right? Mary Ellen Brooks, it turns out, was drunk. Mary Ellen, 2'4", 6", good combination. Brooks, 3'5", 8", excellent combination. This is just like Robert Allenby. And where Robert Allenby had a 5 destiny with 2 good names, Mary Ellen Brooks has a 5'9", 5" total 5 destiny. Nothing but 5 in her total. So she has 2 great names. And then one of the worst possible totals. And there she is drunk and turned over. Wow. And the 5'9", 5" strikes again. But one little quirk about the story, which, you know, is significant to others. And it's somewhat significant, but anyway, it's a good little quirk. Just a little while earlier, she had bought a New England Patriots football jersey to support her team. Whose jersey? Vince Wilfork's. Well, that's an amazing little bit of coincidence, right? But when you look at their numbers and their names, they have real similar numbers. Vince, 5'3", 8". She has an 8 in her last name and a 5'9", 5" total. He is a 2 total, and she is a 2 in her first name. Their numbers mathematically are very similar. So you can say it's just a fluke that she liked him and bought his jersey. It's just a fluke that he ended up helping her. But really, you attract. You attract according to your thinking, and your name creates your thinking. One other little news story here. Microsoft researchers use light beams to charge smartphones. Now the bottom line here, they're not using microwave radiation to charge phones. But get this. Quote, this is a research paper from Microsoft, so this is before the marketing spin is on the story. The researcher's paper notes that, quote, wireless power methods have several disadvantages, preventing them from being used in our targeted usage scenarios. Number one, the electromagnetic radiation of wireless power is much higher than wireless communication, i.e. Wi-Fi or 3G. Thus, safety to human bodies is a big issue in wireless power. As a result, wireless power is usually used only in extreme scenarios such as in outer space, for military purposes, or in very short ranges. I've never seen any of that anywhere. No one ever talks about that. Everyone else says, flat out, shouting as loud as they can, microwave radiation is harmless. All the trolls, all the liars, all the media shills and big business shills, they all say the same thing. It is harmless. They shout it from the rooftops nonstop. Or, if it's the press, they just avoid the subject. They get far too many bills paid by wireless companies advertising to ever bring the subject up. But there's Microsoft. And let me tell you, Microsoft, as a technical company, They know what they're talking about. They're not stupid, that is for sure. Perhaps pound for pound, Microsoft might be the smartest company there is. It's certainly in the top three or four. Number two, as the radio frequencies used in wireless power are much lower than the frequencies of lights, it is hard to emit the radio waves within a straight beam. This causes energy waste. If the receiver is not large enough, it makes it hard to ensure safety. So the second gotcha of wireless charging is the energy spews out in all directions. Oh, man. So I say technical article, innovative technique, and honesty. Way to go, Microsoft. Way to go, man. All right, I'm going to get to my of the weeks. Hopefully my system won't crash. I've really been pushing my browser, and I didn't want to close it and reopen it, so fingers and toes crossed here. Bad driver of the week. Story. The government wants you to buy a car with smarter brakes. I was shocked by this. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is adding crash imminent braking and dynamic braking support to its list of recommended advanced safety features for new cars. Well, first of all, recommended advanced. Bottom line, not every car will have it. That's been my point about ABS. They don't want you to avoid having an accident. They want you to have an accident and then survive it. Then the insurance companies make tons of money. The car companies sell cars because the cars got smashed up. This is a continuation of that, really. Anyway, the former uses sensors to activate the brakes if a crash is imminent and the driver already hasn't. Dynamic braking support, on the other hand, increases stopping power if you haven't put enough pressure on the brake pedal. Well, it's kind of like the ABS, right? The ABS is the other extreme. If you put too much pressure on, the ABS will back off the brakes. So basically, this is brake management. Once you tell the system, hey, I need to be using my brakes a lot, it makes sense that the system should both put as much braking power on and stop your brakes from locking up. It all makes sense. But shocking. Once in a while, the government does a good thing. You have to really work to see it happen, but... Oh, re-listen of the week. This guy, Ryan Holiday, one of his tips that he learned, and it's in the story, it's kind of humorous. The story says, you know, I'm crazy, but check me out on this. He listens to the same song over and over again, and it's a way to filter out all the distractions. Because when you listen to a song over and over again, it becomes impossible to process it as a new song. Your system starts to rebel against it, and you start to push the song away from yourself. Well, if it's in your headphones, you're not hearing anything else, you're only hearing the song. And when your mind starts to push the song away, you're left with nothing. You're left with no distractions. Brilliant. So let's call that the re-listen of the week. Listening to the same song, pick your song, over and over again. He was giving numbers like 120 times in a row and stuff like that. Oh, wonderful. So my reread of the week was Ryan Holiday, The Obstacle is the Way. That's the name of his book. I had some notes about it. I think I've already shared it all. I give that book an A+. Rewatch of the week, or watch of the week. My first watch of the week was that Whole Foods video where they're beating up that guy. That was one of those defining moment videos. I meant to say, I had it in my notes, that personally, I will never shop at Whole Foods Market just because of that video. Because that video is saying loudly and clearly, confirming what I already know about that name combination. There is nothing good about the names Whole, that's not balanced. Whole Foods, that's not balanced. Whole Foods Market, that's not balanced. There's no balance there. I don't want anything to do with that. I will never go there until they change the name of their entire business. And of course they won't do that, so we'll agree to part ways. Rewatch the week, I was on IMDb. I go there just about daily. Just want to see the news, see if some famous celebrity's in trouble, or once in a while there might be something worth watching. It's really mostly trash. They promote like three new things on the top of IMDb. This is a big, you know, website, a big following, big influence. I think it's now owned by Amazon, so it's big owns big. It's big business. One of the three things they were promoting yesterday was Hannibal. Hannibal is a TV series about, I guess, Hannibal Lecter. So I click on that link to go to that specific page for that TV series. It's been going for a year or two or three or something. And people vote on these TV series and these movies. Currently, this Hannibal TV series has a vote, an average voter rating of 8.6 out of 10. That's near perfect. It's almost as high as you will ever run across, close to it. 100,000 plus people have voted on this. So I say, obviously, most of these voters have gone insane. Why would we make a series about this Hannibal Lecter? What is the benefit to life of this story? What is the attraction of people to this subject matter? And how could anyone but a lunatic give this 8.6 out of 10? Why is this Hannibal on the main page of IMDb? And then somewhat, I don't know if it's sarcastically or whatever, pick your descriptive adjective, Lee. Is anybody thinking of the children? Really? In one of the message threads, there was a comment, and the person goes, it is pretty gross at times, isn't it? But so easy on the eye at the same time. Very clever. I guess there's some eye candy in the series. This thread, if you read this thread about this Hannibal, you'll fear for the future, man. People, boy, give them a chance and they can be really screwed up. This is why you avoid fiction, children. Cool thing in the week, Leatherman's. I guess Leatherman's did those sort of pliers that are also like 20 other things. Pliers, screwdriver, bottle opener, and microwave oven, you know, type devices. And Leatherman, anyway, has now designed one that fits around your wrist. It's a wearable, just like your Fitbits and all that. But this wearable is like all the genius of their pliers in something that's the shape of like a watch band, a watch strap. This thing is just beautiful to look at. This is truly an engineer's dream. Truly what an engineer dreams of and gets excited about. All right, uncool. I guess the government health site, healthcare.gov, it came out this last week that they share all your private and personal information that you're forced to enter onto their site. They share it with a whole bunch of companies, a whole bunch of big companies. The scope of what is disclosed and or how it might be used was not immediately clear, but it can include your age, your income, your zip code, whether you smoke or not, and if you're pregnant. It can include your computer's IP address, which can identify your name and address when combined with other information collected by sophisticated online marketing or advertising firms. The Obama administration says healthcare.gov's connection to data firms were intended to help improve the consumer experience. Officials said outside firms are barred from using the data to further their own business interests. Oh, they're barred. Oh, here's a gun. Please don't use it. Seriously uncool. All right, quote of the week. Maybe I'll do two. First one, art is ego, which is why so much of it is bad. This is a quote in regard to a movie. In the movie threads, someone just typed this out, but let's read it again. Art is ego, which is why so much of it is bad. You know, it's absolutely true. So much of art is just horrendous. It's look away bad. Yeah, there is good art. And even in bad art, you can admire it. You can look at it and go, wow, that guy put a lot of effort into that. Or, wow, that's a real original take on that subject. But so much of it is bad. And here's this guy saying why. He said it was an old adage. I went and searched online. I could not find anyone saying this phrase. So he might have changed it enough that Google couldn't help me. Art is ego. Fascinating. I think what I would say is, you have to be careful to make sure that your own art is not ego. You have to be humble. You have to be honest. You have to have a purpose. You have to be ruthless and hard on yourself. And then your art will probably not have an ego. Second quote, you must try to generate happiness within yourself. If you aren't happy in one place, chances are you won't be happy any place. Ernie Banks. Ernie, 156, Banks, 112, 268 total, 8 destiny. Successful destiny, the two qualities, that likable quality, he had it in the total of his name, he had it in his last name. And then the honesty of both Ernie and Banks, there's a one in there. So he was honest, he was likable, he was successful, and he was hardworking. And in his birthday, he was born the 31st, which is a 4, the hardworking number. So this has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast, my 50th, for January the 26th, 2015. Good luck with your life. Take care.